I think the mistake that we make is that we don't realize our own power. And then when I accept that I am powerful and that I am the creator, I'm the creator of my thoughts, I'm the creator of my habits, I'm the creator of my insecurities, I am the creator of these things. And so that's what happens.
There's an action that seems to suggest itself at the end of this, that I've now mastered the thought here. What's the doing that follows that?
The doing would, of course, vary from situation to situation, but mostly, I think the doing is actually happens in that moment, and the doing happens because in that thought, when I master that thought, the next thing that I would need to master is that I am a detached observer, that not only am I an actor, but also I'm a spectator in the drama of life. And so when I become that detached, when I become all of those things, then whatever my next step needs to be automatically will emerge.
So it suggests itself to you?
Yes, that it will intuitively come about.
Why? Especially why, when you detach and step essentially above this to look upon it as an observer, why does that then suggest the next step?
Because if we go back to our original thing about I am divine, I have wisdom. My innate nature is wisdom. And so what happens is that wisdom is getting blocked. It's getting blocked by too much thinking. It's getting blocked by uncleanness of my thoughts. It's getting blocked by my mind wandering here and there. And actually my mind putting up questions, can I do this? Can I not do this? Can I actually do this? Because that's the insecurity. And so that doubt is blocking me. And so blocking me from my own wisdom. And so when that doubt is removed, that wisdom emerges.
Do you make any distinctions between the, again, I would use good and bad, but they're really not good and bad. But the one side of this in which I'm facing my anxieties.
Right.
The other side that says, you know, essentially man up, face up to what you should be doing.
Your responsibilities.
Your responsibilities. Among them, perhaps, my responsibility to be more successful at what I do. Do you make any distinction between those? The anxieties on the one hand, the responsibilities on the other.
Actually, it's an interesting point because I don't think so. I think we sabotage our own success. So my anxiety is sabotaging my success. So it's not that clearly defined a line. If I get rid of my anxiety, then the responsibility automatically happens.
How do we know when we've crossed some threshold in this from being totally defeated by these things at one point, or at least being sabotaged by them, and surmounting them at the other end? There's some tipping point at which I know that I've moved from one to the other. How do I recognize it?
There is a wisdom, a knowing that emerges, and also there is a kind of almost like a calming down, that you feel totally at ease, that you feel whatever happens, I'm okay with it. You're not worrying too much about the future. And I think that's what happens. That's how you know. That you're not anticipating and you're not analyzing and you're not thinking, oh, I'm going to do this and if this happens and this happens and create 10 scenarios. And you know that none of those 10 scenarios actually happen during the day. And so you stop doing that. And that's how you know that you've really mastered this power to face, is that you are in the moment, you're enjoying the moment, and you are also being in a space where you're not anticipating anything bad.
Well, I've, like many of these conversations, I experience in hearing this two very different reactions internally. One finds the idea of that peaceful confidence very attractive and appealing to me. The other one, the other side of me hears that and thinks, well, you can get pretty close to arrogance in what you've described. You're pretty certain that you're doing the right thing. You know you've got it right here. And the calmness ends the pursuit of additional thinking and additional possibilities. So one end of this continuum seems like a
peaceful confidence.
Well, the like peaceful that. Confidence on one side, okay. And then on the other side
is the arrogance.
Arrogance. How do you feel about that?
The way you can tell, actually, I think it's a very fine line between peaceful confidence and arrogance. And the way you can tell is in the final analysis, if you're arrogant about something, it always deceives you. That things always deceive you.
But what do you mean by that?
For example, you are going to a job interview and before you're always worried about failing. And now you've faced your failure, you know you're going to do it fine. Whatever happens, you're okay with it because you understand whatever happens, you're okay with it. And so you can go in with a peaceful confidence, but if you have arrogance about it, then that will deceive you.
But what will be the deception? That I'm really ready when I'm not?
Yes, that you won't be ready. Or a situation will be presented to you in a way that it's not, and later you'll realize, oh, I made this mistake. And so that's how you'd know.
But only retroactively.
Retroactively, yes.
That's not going to do me a lot of good in a job interview.
Right. No, but actually, as you know, life always gives you more opportunities. And so it's always good to have that peaceful confidence. But arrogance, in a way, has its way of making it known that there is some kind of sorrow that comes with it. Even before you go to the end of it, of, oh, I failed an interview, even before you go there, that you feel that you are getting some kind of sorrow. It's that peaceful confidence is coming with some kind of anxiety. It's coming with some kind of uneasiness. So that's how you know that you're getting into arrogance. And also, the other very important thing about arrogance is people around you will react to you very differently. If you have peaceful confidence, people respond to you differently. If you have arrogance, people respond to you very differently.
And so their reflection of my arrogance, and here we assume that each of them is pure. I really am arrogant and I haven't mixed something up. And over here, I really do have the confidence. What about the people around me tells me which one of them I am?
If they are reacting in a way that they are not happy, or they are showing you that whatever you are doing is, you know, not, they're not pleased with it. In a way, they do show, people around you in some way or the other show that they're not really pleased with the way you're going about things. And so that's how you would know it's arrogance. And there really is nothing called pure arrogance, because arrogance happens because there's a lot of mixture of the vices within the self.
Deception being one of them.
Yeah, deception being one of them.
Well, I know the answer to my next question. Meditation, that's the answer to my next question. Now let me ask it. What role does meditation play in getting me to the point that I can face some of the things that you're talking about?
You know, meditation, I feel, sometimes is misunderstood. Meditation doesn't mean that I'm sitting in a quiet room and blanking my mind. Actually, meditation, if used properly, can master the mind, that you can actually master the mind. And there's only one way of mastering the mind, And that is with wisdom and with knowledge and with understanding. So it's actually first knowledge, the understanding, and then wisdom. Actually, they go in that order. And so that understanding is what is meditation. So that I talk to myself in meditation, I talk to the self in a way that I actually do things with understanding.
What's the knowledge that I'm after to earn?
It could be as simple knowledge, as simple as my original nature is divinity. I'm originally a pure, peaceful being. So that itself is knowledge, as opposed to the label of whatever I am. Like people go with the labels of the body, the label of the car, the year, the make, the model of the body. So instead of getting caught up in that, the knowledge or the truth is that I'm a pure, peaceful, innately divine being. So that is knowledge. And then I keep on understanding that more. I keep using that knowledge so that I understand it more. And that emerges my wisdom more.
Well, part of what I thought you would say here, and put this into the context of what you've just said, was that the knowledge that I get is self-knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So my understanding of my divinity is one form of self-knowledge. But more to the issue of facing all of these various pieces that you've described might be understanding myself as an insecure person, as a person who has these fears, as a person who has these habits.
No, but that's limited thinking. That's wrong understanding.
I've been guilty of that before. But what do you mean by that?
So that's what I mean by meditation, that meditation has been misunderstood. And so that misunderstanding has to be, those illusions have to be shattered. So meditation is nothing but, you could say, shattering illusions. Mm. And so disillusionment in this case is a very good thing, because you're dispelling illusions about wrong misunderstandings.
And I'm going about that in this case by helping myself to see the peaceful person inside of me, and what am I doing with all of these insecurities, all of these obstacles in the process? How am I moving them?
Moving
aside?
Them out.
How am I processing them?
In meditation, what happens is you become a master. You become a master of the self. So as a master, these things happen. You know, it's almost like you're the hero. You're the hero of your own story. Everyone is the hero of their own story. But instead of playing other things like victim and all of the other things, that you play the hero in your own story, and you become that master. And in like in any hero's journey, things come up. Obstacles come, you learn to face, you learn to tolerate, you move on, and you keep becoming that master. And so that's what it is, that you are on a journey. And in this journey, that you accept these things happen, you accept that weaknesses are part of the thing, but the understanding and the wisdom is that you are the master, so you don't get intimidated by them, because they are your creation. You are the creator of these weaknesses, these fears.
And now all of these roads from the various powers that we've talked about lead us here. They lead us to some very core points of wisdom that you suggest that we want to get to. But each of them has a different, a distinction about them. If you had to sum up for the power to face, what the most important distinctions are between it and any of the number of powers that we've talked about so far, what would they be?
The power to face is the ability to face and resolve whatever needs to happen in my life, whether it's my past, whether it's my insecurities, whether it's my fears, it's my responsibilities, all of those things. So it's that. But also it is this thing that you accept in the power to face. You accept that victory is your birthright. that because you're the hero, that victory is your birthright.
And I would see the distinction between that and the yang, the power to tolerate, as being a difference between accepting on one and tolerate side what comes to me and pursuing in the power to face the things that need to be resolved.
Right.
Would that be a fair distinction?
Yes, yes.
When we have reached some point of success in the power to face, the greatest reflection will be, the greatest evidence will be?
I think the greatest evidence would be that whatever happens on your journey, you completely are at ease and you feel that everything is beneficial. You don't take sorrow from whatever situation is happening.
Would you like to offer any closing thoughts?
Sure. The one thing that I want to sum up, the four main things that you would need the power to face. One is that you are divine, that your original nature is divinity, that everything is beneficial. Learn to be a spectator and also an actor, that you take responsibility, you do spectator and an actor. And then the last one is that whatever happens, you'll be okay. That I am the hero, so I will be fine, I will be victorious.
Do you have to say that a lot to yourself to get it to go beyond thinking and turn it into living? Because it does sound to me in some important ways like a huge moment when I can reach that point of acceptance.
Yeah, you do have to. Truth is something which is very simple, but you have to keep reinforcing it to yourself for it to become a reality in your life.
It would be helpful to have some sense of how long into a journey I might expect to be able to get to that point.
The journey is actually about a distance. It's about a distance, and the distance is the starting point is limited consciousness, consciousness of me not being good enough. To the end of the journey is completely accepting and living my divine self. And so the length of that, how long you're going to take to travel that distance is completely dependent on how easy you are on yourself and how fast you're willing to learn and go there.
But a lifetime? A week?
Week. If you're willing to learn that quickly, week is actually... So it's not about time. It is about the change, that shift in consciousness from this point to that point. So it, however long it takes you to shift your consciousness.
Well, we've got to face the fact that our time is up here. So thanks a whole lot for this
conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was delightful.